ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sport.
You're listening to AFL Saturday on your radio, ABC Sport Digital, and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Saturday.
Are Brisbane still the team to beat as they prove too good for Geelong again down at the Cattery?
Spills down underneath McKenna, socks it inside 50. Charlie Cameron, handball away to Bailey. He's kicked two in a minute. This is overwhelming. A lights out start from the Premiers. Brisbane have kicked six inside 14 minutes, and it's six love Brisbane.
Yeah, they were channeling Rafael Nadal, and it was six love after they started hot down there on Thursday night. Sydney, they solidified second spot with a comfortable win over the Dogs. Are they ready for the top of the table clash with Fremantle?
Hand pass away from Fremantle to Heaney, who snaps from the impossible angle. He does things that only Isaac Heaney can do. And he tumbles it through for his first goal tonight. There's your highlight.
And Lachie Neale goes on a dinner date with his old coach, the St Kilda coach, Ross Lyon. Is this level of transparency around player movement good for the game? And also, way back on Monday night, a Four Corners expose reveals the concerning prevalence of CTE in former footballers. Is this existential for the game as we know it? Welcome to AFL Saturday. Great to have your company. Ben Cameron in for Corbin Middlemass. And Mick Malthouse is down in Launceston. Luke Ball is here with me in the ABC studios. Mick, firstly to you, the football, the round ball world game, from a coaching point of view, should we have had an 18-year-old Lucas Herrington taking penalty number four, Mick?
Why not?
He's 18.
Honestly, Mike Tyson won the world title at 18. Shane Gould held every freestyle from 100 metres to 1,500 metres at 15, Ben. So what has age got to do with it?
I didn't see Shane Gould or Mike Tyson taking a spot kick at a FIFA World Cup, Mick.
How old was the first one?
Scottish Harry, he's in his mid to late 20s.
Well, he missed. So I don't think age gets you in or miss. He was closer than Harry. Harry leant back on his. I don't know nothing about having spot shots there, Benny, but let me tell you, if you lean back when you're 20 metres out, you know what happens? You kick a point.
Yeah.
So when you lean back with a soccer ball, I guarantee you it's going to be lifted. Mm. So, they're the fundamentals, Ben. Look, we're all disappointed. I still think Australia did themselves proud. I'm still bitterly disappointed the AFL didn't come out and say, on behalf of our football community, we wish you the very best. I don't know why we're so scared. Actually, I do know why we're so scared now, because my granddaughter was playing soccer at home of the Matildas in Bundoora. It's unbelievable the numbers of kids out there. And the common thread was, we don't want our kids playing AFL because of concussion. It resonated right when you start talking to people. It's quite interesting. And what we've got to do is got to make sure that we don't lose our game because of it. And we totally understand we've got to protect the head. Off air, we're talking to Bawley, how many times he'd been concussed. And you can see the effect it's had on him. So you just got to be careful.
Yeah, it is a concern. We'll talk about that with the Four Corners episode. Some great reporting by Jess Halloran back on Monday night. Bawley, come with me here.
Benny.
Tony Popovich, he got it wrong, didn't he?
Gosh. We're all disappointed. We're all experts too.
Yep,
aren't we today? We're all experts. And I'm not going to pretend that I got up at four, but I just had a suspicion that it would go to extra time. So I thought 6 o'clock will be early enough to get up and still see enough action. And sure enough, one all. And then with a couple of minutes to go in extra time, he makes the big call, doesn't he? And takes off our man, the Beach.
I think that was the right decision.
Oh, okay. You're going to have to convince me.
Matty Ryan's a very good penalty saver and a very good shot stopper, as is Beach, but it didn't work.
He hasn't played one minute the whole World Cup.
Yep.
There's something about a guy who, and he made some big saves and that late in that second half too. He would have been chock full of confidence. I don't think it's not a fatigue thing, I wouldn't have thought. I mean, they don't have to do a heap of work.
It's a nerve thing, Bawley. As you say, it's a nerve. But if you can play the first game up and then the second game against the Americans and so forth. Mm. So his nerves clearly are good enough to do it. I think it's unwise for us to challenge. Who goes in the goal? Who goes there? The idea would have been one in front on full time. That would have been the best case scenario.
I mean, the penalty takers as well. Just quickly, Mick. I thought one of Mo Touré or Aiden Frustic should have taken the first penalty rather than Harry. But anyway, it's all done now. It's so all what done. Do you do?
Yeah, your centre half back. Does he really need to take the first? I get it. He's a skipper, and I don't know. You're right. All we can do is compare it to a situation in our game, which we know a bit about. It'd be like having your centre half back take your first kick in a 5-kick kickoff. Anyway, we are proud of the Mick. You're right. I mean, I think to get to that stage in the tournament wasn't necessarily expected. You know, we had a tough group, so to come out of that. Mm. And you can just watch. You know, when you see it now, as it gets to the pointy end, the quality, the level of skill really goes up. Yeah. Doesn't it, in the last 16. So. We ended up finishing, you know, roughly where we are ranked in the world, aren't we? We're sort of 28, so
it's pretty interesting. The way they've done it is outstanding in many respects, because Italy would beat us. There's no question. They don't make the final because of the way it's designed with Europe, Asia, mm-hmm. North America, South America, and Africa. It gives every continent an opportunity to perform in that 48. You know, there was a bit of criticism about going from 32 to 48, but I just think if soccer to include some of the more undeveloped countries or the younger countries or the ones that don't have the same facilities, I think they've done the right thing. 48, you know, a lot of criticism, but it's certainly like Germany and Holland out of it. I mean, straight away you go, really? And who beat them? Yes.
Yeah. Well, the game after ours, Cape Verde nearly caused the upset of the tournament, didn't they, against Argentina.
Let's move on to the World Cup.
Yeah.
Colombia and Ghana.
Talk about something about half a clue about.
Yeah, correct. 1-0 Colombia lead Ghana in that match at the moment. Last night, Mick, I'll start with you. Sydney taking on the Western Bulldogs. They kicked the first 6 goals of the game, and really that was the margin in the end. They win by 35 points. Yeah. It sort of oscillated between a little bit more and a little bit less of that, but it always looked like Sydney would win. But they did it a little differently last night, didn't they? They used the flanks a little bit more. They went into a kick mark game at different times. It wasn't so much of that forward handball that we've seen from them.
Mm. Well, I think Sydney, full credit to Dean Cox for a start off. I think what you have to reinvent your side from time to time. Mm. And sometimes you've got to do that during the course of the year. And you may have to do it when you're sitting second on the ladder. Be fair to say, Borley, in 2010, we were beaten by St Kilda early in the season, and I think I might have made the comment they won't beat us again, only because I just felt this confidence that we could adjust the game then to beat what perceived to be the best side with St Kilda. And I reckon that Dean Cox has looked at the results. They're sitting second on the ladder, but they've been beaten and badly, but they haven't beaten too many top sides. Now, I don't think the Dogs are a top side. Right now, they're struggling with numbers. They don't know what to do with English, which is a really... I'm just bewildered by that, really bewildered by that, particularly when you see Grundy, who's been less than great against some of the ruckmen going around, but he monsters those that he should monster, and he absolutely monsters those sort of... Timmy English has got to be able to jump over him because Grundy doesn't jump, but for some reason or another, he wasn't in the centre that often. So Sydney have to adjust now, knowing they're probably going to finish in the top four, to combat sides like Fremantle, like Hawthorn, like Geelong. Who else is in? That's about the top four, I think.
Adelaide, maybe.
But you've got to look at the top sides, Bully, and go, now, what do they do better than us, and how do we counter that? So I'm with experimentation this time of the year.
Yeah. What do they do too? The good sides take away your
one strength,
don't they? Your strength. Mm. Yeah. So you're right. It's really good coaching. It's adjusting on the run through the season.
It's not been pig-headed Bully, is it?
No, exactly, Mick. Yeah. And so the first half of the year, all the talk was the Swans' forward handball game, their run and gun game off halfback. Well, last night it was the territory game that won them the game. You know, I think their ability to be able to lock the ball in, and I think I heard a stat. They're a top two team in terms of scoring from front half. So all the talk around there, you know, you think Blakey, you think the Swans, they hit Warner through the corridor, their back half game. That at the start of the year when things are fast and free flowing, that can, you know, that can work, and that got them out of the blocks, didn't it? Now, through the middle part of the year and as you narrow in towards September, the game starts to shift a little bit, doesn't it? And becomes a bit more contested. The better teams start to go to school and pick you apart a bit. So it was a really good adjustment. I think clearances, it felt like the Swans were in control. The numbers showed they were pretty even, but the Swans' ability to be able to defend in the front half and lock the ball in, turn the ball over in their front half rather than let it get to their back 50 was the difference last night. And they really never looked, you know, after that first quarter. They really, as you said, the Dogs, good players who they're still far too heavily relying on. We'll talk about, you know, their defence is still a real issue to the point where, you know, they had to put their ruckman down to full back, which is another discussion to your point, Mick.
Bully, I'm going to throw you this question, and I know it sounds a bit contentious. I still worry that the leading goal kicker has kicked big scores, particularly against the Dogs, who haven't got a good a really decent key back. I mean, they're growing. O'Donnell's growing, but he's miles behind what, like, say, Barras is and Battle and these sort of players. When they get to the big games, Curno has let them down.
Yep.
And whether or not, come finals, he's not going to be playing against sides that don't have good key backs or a good back system. He will need another forward to be able to combat the fact that the energies go to him, and if he gets taken to the game, who is next? Okay, Papley's not playing here. He's a small, medium forward. And he's a great forward. There's no question. He's one of the best forwards going around. But they need another tall, and I'm not sure that they've got that against the best sides.
Well, they did leave McLean last night. And I think
though,
they get a chance though without a Marty now. And the jury was out a bit on whether you can be too tall. And to your point, you know, are they only one trick ponies, those guys? And the challenges are going to come for Curnow, as you said. Now he's had a terrific year. You know, first year at a new club. So
he's had a terrific year against bottom sides.
Yeah, I understand. So the challenge is going to come for him. I thought McLean was a real positive last night. McDonald went out of the side. They brought in Hamling just to stretch more as a horses for courses, I think, to stretch the Dogs' lack of key position depth behind the footy. And we get a really good look at it this week, don't we? And when they go over to Perth and play against one of, if not the best defences in the competition. So you're right, the jury's still out on them forward of the ball, but I feel like the balance looked better last night. So I think there's a room for one more tall to come in. McDonald probably comes back in. Then, from all reports, Amardi's going to be out for the majority of the year anyway. So I think that'll work okay for them. No, but I think Curnow, McDonald, and McLean coming, you know, resting in the ruck as well, I think that's their best look.
Just on the ball movement game as well. Like, I feel like everyone gets very excited about ball movement from your back half, very sexy in the modern game, but finals are still very much a forward half game, and can you pin it in your forward half? Just on Sydney as well, Mick, you alluded to this, their wins against the lesser sides, their losses have been against Hawthorn, Geelong and Brisbane, and now they come up against Fremantle, so they have generally won against the lesser teams. This was Dean Cox last night speaking about the evolution of their game, though.
Oh, I think you know, it was just tough to play the way you were at the start of the season for a whole season. And part of that is that certain modes at which we want to play, we only don't want to only do that. You know, so for the whole season, we are still learning about what will work next week against Fremantle, the following week against Adelaide, and they'll look differently. And, you know, we've got to build belief and some experience in those games that we're good enough to match the best, and when we play a certain way, we don't have to only play one way.
So that was Dean Cox post-game last night. Turning our attention to the Western Bulldogs, Mick, your old club, 9-7 on the season. It feels like they're in a very familiar spot. The magnets are getting flicked around. They're middle of the pack. Can they put it all together and make a run in the back half of the season? And we saw it again last night. Luke Beveridge moved their star ruckman, who They seem to win when he plays and lose when he doesn't. He moved him to fullback. What message was he trying to send there?
I really don't know. Look, I trust Luke Beveridge's coaching and his philosophies, because I know him. Two is I just think he's smart enough to get it right. Now, there was a massive question mark whether English would play, and I'm wondering whether that had any bearing whatsoever. I don't know whether it stopped him from jumping or shoulder or I don't know, and I don't think anyone knows. But I'm just looking at the ladder now. The likelihood is, like, if let's say North Melbourne win, if North Melbourne win, they'll go above them. That tosses them into that territory of that wild card. Destiny's in their own hands whether they can make the top six. And I think the top six is a bit different than the top four these days, because I think fifth and sixth get a distinct advantage in that first week of the, or second week of the finals, apparently. But the worry for the Dogs is that their depth outside of the top seven or eight, and then it goes down another seven or eight. Then the next level, are they really good enough against the top sides? The answer is probably not. They need... Bond and Pellet falls onto him so often, and English.
And Richards.
And Dale and Richards. Waitman has got to get back into... So the other bloke who gets off the hook so often, and I like him, but Norton just he just doesn't... Somehow or another, I reckon at some stage, and I'm not one, I will not question Luke Beveridge, but personally I would like to see him go up the ground into a key half forward where he can get up the ground a bit and come back and get that bit of space. It just seems to, at full forward seems to, if he gets locked in, he's got no space but other than the aerial. And how often do you see a great mark? Not often in today's football. So if he takes two of those and kicks two goals, that's not enough. He's got to get more outside 50 football and bring it back in himself.
Yeah. It was, just going back to Tim English, to me, and I think it was Jason Dunstall, it was a vote, it looked like a real vote of no confidence. Now, he might have been a bit sore going there, but he got, I mean, this is your, as you said, Ben, this is your star ruckman.
Yeah.
And when he plays well, he does look like a star ruckman, a top, you know, one,
has
two
ruckman. Has he lost his confidence,
Well, it looked like it, Mick, last night, because in the end, it was like they had to hide him and pull back. And even not to put him forward and maybe try Norton back, or, but I know Lobb's their rest ruckman, so, and he plays behind the footy, so that's their system, the way they have to do it. So
Norton's magnet is the only one that's glued to the board for Luke Beveridge.
Yeah, but I would have thought surely the first port of call was at half time, and the hit out numbers, and they're not hit outs only, but there were hit outs to advantage, and it was real good old, I love it, real old school, especially at Sydney where you can really score out of the set of bounds. It was real. Belted forward, surge territory, and then lock the ball in. And we mentioned earlier about that's how they set up the game.
But just, Paulie, you're just going to jump in 1 second there, Paulie. 2 years ago, I probably would have been sitting with you on the show before the grand final, or the weeks before the grand final. And one of the things we said, it was a Brisbane-Sydney. It was, they played each other, didn't they? Yeah. No, or Geelong, was it Geelong? Who belted Sydney in that grand final?
Brisbane.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course it was.
Both of them did. Yeah, in 2022 and 2024.
That's right. So what I was saying, that with the centre square, Grundy doesn't jump. He doesn't jump. And I'm thinking, well, how's Fort going to get over him? How's this going to work out? Well, he did. He muscled him and negated anything that Grundy did. Last night, I'm still waiting for, when you look at some of these ruckmen, that young Williams of West Coast, his jumping capacity... He only needs another experienced player in there and they'll start dominating it, because he gets up with a new rule and just puts it where you like. How Grundy gets away with it against the sides is against non-jumping ruckman. If you've got a jumping ruckman, Grundy struggles. And that's why I reckon that Sydney struggle against the best sides, because they know how to negate his ability to use the ball.
Just back to English, though. He can look timid at times, can't he? Now, I know he's had some...
Not
some
timid. That's not the word.
Not physical. Not physical enough, Mick. Not physical enough. Well, he got around the ground, too.
I just don't think that word applies to him, not intimidate. I just think that he's a different sort of ruckman that can jump, but somehow or another doesn't seem to dominate that with the hand
on
the ball.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten. I mean, Sam Darcy, clearly he's huge out, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, both in the ruck, pinching it, but also the impact, the flow-on effect on Norton has been significant for him.
Just before we move on from this game, Sydney coming up against Fremantle next week. We've had to wait until round 18 to get that match up.
Yeah.
No, so finally we get it. I spoke about who Sydney have lost to. Will they find their level next week against Fremantle?
Yeah, I think so. Although I did like what I saw. It was a good response last night because they got a good audit and a good punch in the face from Brisbane the week before. It was a good response last night. They're still missing a few key players. You look around the edges last night, they're still pretty young. So that is when you think about
Papley,
the key moments.
Throw Papley in there.
Yeah, that's right. There's still a reliance on Heaney and Warner and then Curnow, to kick goals. They're still obviously McInerney out, Papley you mentioned. So
they'll do well next week.
We'll see. Yeah, I think though, given how healthy and how unreliant, or the fact that the Freo aren't as reliant on individuals, it'll be a really good game. It's a great test, and it's sad that we've had to wait this long for it. As you mentioned, Ben.
Can I just throw in there? You guys might be more updated. The key back for Sydney, McCartan, is he available?
He should be,
because if he comes in, that from his concussion, of course he did. Yeah. So if he can control one of those key forwards, Amari out is not a worry because I reckon him and Kernan haven't hit it off. I think they've got to find a different combination. It'll be like you say time and time again, Borley. It's battle of the midfield, and that's where it'll lay next week. Imagine, I'd be interested to see whether Heaney gets tagged, because he's clearly their versatile mid to forward.
Just on the Dockers as well. I'm sorry to anyone who's listening out west where we resided for a long time, Mick. But since the year 2000, the team on top of the ladder at the end of round 16, like the Dockers were, have won 5 of the 25 premierships. So they're only a 1 in 5 chance of winning the flag from here. Coming up next, we will discuss Brisbane. Are they still the team to beat after they just flexed on Geelong back on Thursday night?
This is AFL Saturday.
On ABC Radio, ABC Sport Digital
and ABC Listen.
Just look for the AFL button.
Remiss of me not to mention earlier too, you got the rookie in the chair, so you got to forgive me. 1300 558 222 is the number if you wish to call up and get involved. 1300 558 222, or you can text in 0437 222 774 if you wish to get involved. I was down there on Thursday night watching the game at the Cattery between Brisbane and Geelong, and once again, Mick, in a game that really matters, Brisbane were just too good for Geelong. How did they do it?
Yes, it's very interesting. Just going over some stats, I'm going to throw this in and just walk away from it, so don't expect any response. Free kick 16-9. Amazing how many times that's in the affirmative down at Geelong. So I'll leave that. Now, the other stat, and Geelong don't get beaten with this one, but they have. And this is the interesting one for me. 69-52 inside 50s. That is substantial for Geelong. If they end up with 69, you walk away going, they've had a 10-goal victory. I thought their fight back was outstanding. And I was listening to Chris Scott in his interview, and even though there was, it was 8 goals to, I'm going to get the stats here, 8 goals to, 1 at quarter time or thereabouts.
They kicked one late.
And he said, we weren't worried because we weren't playing bad football. Looking at that game, I totally agree with him. They were goals made out of, some made out of nothing. Some looked really easy because
they got
in their forward line so quick. But Geelong, to me, never, ever looked out of it. They are a side that I don't think they worry about the scoreboard. As a coach that's been there now for, 15 or 16 years, whatever he's been there, he knows his team. And that's when you've got the experience of that team, you go, well, okay, we might be down, but we're not out of it. They were never out of it. That's what makes me say about Geelong. I read, they've lost 4 out of 5. They are, I still think, the best Victorian side in it.
Yeah,
at the moment.
Could be 8th by the end of the week.
Yeah, Hawthorn could take over, but I still think Geelong are the side.
Just on that, can I just...
One of my
observations when I'm down on the boundary, I find it remarkable, like, babe, it's 8 goals to 1 at quarter time, and I see Chris Scott come out, And he's quite languid and relaxed, and he sort of just casually puts on his big puffer jacket, rolls over, lets Dangerfield and Blitzarves address the group primarily. He sort of gathers himself while the line coaches speak to the group. Then he addresses them, but it's not demonstrative in any way. So you're exactly right, Mick. Like, he didn't seem panicked or stressed in any way.
No, it's the beauty of having the experience and the leadership that he has in his team, doesn't
That's
he?
Right.
But it was as much their undoing, which he referenced after. It was six goals straight from turnover in that first quarter. So you picture Bailey Smith, who was a bit rusty after a couple of weeks off, just missing a switch kick, easy goal. Guthrie, wasn't it, you know, from the kick out or from deep in defence, easy goal. And the Lions couldn't miss, as you said, Mick. They took their chance. But that's what they can do,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they did it again in the third quarter when they were challenged. So that's, you know, we'll talk about the winners.
I thought
it was another really strong performance. They've got they've got gears more than any other team. And you think about it, they've got some players to come back into the team too. That's the scary part. Mick, you mentioned the inside 50s for Geelong.
Yeah.
The challenge at the moment is they haven't got Jeremy Cameron on the end of them kicking the goals.
How's he going?
That's the real challenge.
Can I just ask Benny one little question? You're on the ground, Ben. My indication was that there wasn't an advantage, and yet I'm looking at the scores, 8-1-8, and this, I'm talking about Brisbane, 8-1-8 and then 2. Was there any wind advantage?
No, if anything, it was favouring the Barwon River end, which was the end that wasn't having any scoring.
So so even when you look at the half-time scores, I know that it was 31 shots to 28, but after half-time, it was still 10-3 to 7-6. Brisbane seemed to have enough just to get in front and stay in front, but Geelong are always going to keep coming. And that's what makes them a good football side.
Yeah, and led by Dangerfield, who's still doing it. It's amazing.
Wow,
the level
goals.
That he's still playing and the power that he's still got. But Cameron, what do you do with Cameron, Mick? Without knowing the ins and outs of his injury, and we might have a grab here from Chris, but we'll ask you after this.
Well, we'll go to the phones. I think Michael wants to make a point around that. Michael has given us a buzz on 1300 558 222. Michael, welcome.
Good afternoon, Ben. I'm not a question about St Kilda, but I mean, Cameron is one of our great players, and to watch him play like this, I think, is really sad because he's obviously carrying this horrendous injury that is not going to get better, apparently, because it's not just Thursday. It's been weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
He's had no possessions in about four quarters over the last 3 weeks. My question is this. Do you guys think if Geelong can't win the grand final win a grand final with him playing like this, do you just say, well, that's it, let's put him out till next year? I mean, it seems such a...
No.
But they can't win a grand final with him playing like this, Mick.
No, I get what you're saying. In fact, I totally agree with what you're saying outside of the fact that we've still got a number of weeks to go. I know Chris Scott, I'm talking about here, has gone out of his way to say, no, he's fit. We've spoken to the medicals, no, he's fit. I think there gets a time when you are fit, but your confidence is so low that perhaps, and I only say perhaps, send him up to the sun for a week. Let him get the sun on his back. Bring him back, have another week of training, 2 weeks away from the hurly-burly of just being hit and just ease him back into the side. I think it'd be a real mistake not to persevere and want him to play finals, but perhaps there's a little gap there that can set you say. I don't know, we did it, Bally, with a couple of players who were really, really sore, and we put them away for a week or so. In fact, I think they missed the Melbourne game from memory, and we won the game, but those players come back and they just had the sun on their back and they felt better about themselves.
I think all Camerons should go up north and have a week off and get the sun on their back. I think they deserve it with what they've done in the early part of the season.
I can see you're related to him too.
Just on Brisbane though, like you can't, I think Corbin said, you can't fool the players about, you know, whether a game early on in the season has real meaning to it.
Definitely.
Is this a group that knows that, look, it's getting to the witching hour and they're starting to ratchet it up? And are they still the team to beat, Bally?
I think Fremantle are still entitled to be favourites. They can't do any more. Obviously, the question around them is under finals pressure, can they stand up? Now, they're going to get home finals, so you feel like they're going to go in heavy favourites in those first couple of rounds, and they've got to come to Melbourne. But, yeah, I think Brisbane are coming. They're, and to answer your question, and I think I've been pretty consistent with this throughout the start of the year too. You're right. You've only got – Dean Cox sort of referenced it there. You've only got a finite amount of energy across the year, don't you? So they know, they've been there in the last 2 years, they know that, you know, a game in April or May just isn't, you know, not to be sort of too flippant about it, but you know, they just need to qualify and time and get themselves playing at a level, you know, from now, almost from here on in. So they're building really well. I think at the start of the year I said, I reckon they can win. With the talent they've got on their list, they can win it at 90%. No other team can. Now, Freo have jumped out of the blocks and their health and availability is unbelievable at the moment. Can they maintain it? I still think they probably need a Hugh McCluggage and a Dane Zorko in a prelim final, I think.
Just on that finite energy, jumping to Fremantle, I mean, Mick, you know the travel load and the travel burden coming out of WA. It sounds like Fremantle aren't going to rest players down the stretch. They're going to finish top two, should they?
Oh, I believe so. I do believe
with
so.
With the travel,
And look, people don't understand that unless you've actually coached it or played it. It is an enormous task over the journey. It's like you might say, well, 1 week, yeah, okay. But if you do it, and then the bonus to Fremantle has been North Melbourne having a home game in Western Australia. So you've gone a couple of weeks in fact, 3 weeks without travel. That's a real, real bonus. And people won't understand that unless you've been there. They've got the bye at the end. We hate that bye at the end, but it's there. That's another one. If you're going to fit, I've written an article and it's in today. And one of them is who's key to your team. Jackson, they'll win games without Jackson. But to be sure you're going to win games, Jackson needs to play. Now he may be a player that, and you've got to put personal glory away from team glory here. They say, oh, you know, he might be in line for Brownlow. Well, I reckon Dacos has probably got enough votes right now. He could probably fold it up and he'd still win the Brownlow. So that's incidental. Every Brownlow medalist you ever hear talk, they go, I'd give this away for a premiership. So Jackson's the bloke they've got to protect probably more than anyone else in that team. Heaney's another one down in Sydney. At Geelong, though, you go, I'm not sure. And same with Hawthorn. They could probably have one or two out and get away with it. Day is certainly topped up Hawthorn, but getting what you said, Ben, I would be really looking at giving Jackson a breather, probably about 2 or 3 weeks out. Now I don't know how that goes with who they're playing, but that's certainly what they've got.
So they're in Sydney tonight or today. After that, it's a pretty good run. They've only got to go to Adelaide, and then they play Melbourne, I think, in about round 20 at the MCG. Yeah. I reckon they'll want to play at the MCG.
Got to play at the MCG. Right. Got to get your best side on the MCG. Take all the kids over, let them walk around, and let them know it.
So other than that, they're pretty well at home. So I think you keep it rolling. Don't play with it too much.
I'm the most important player for Geelong. It might be Max Holmes, who had another phantom hamstring on Thursday night. So you go back to that 2022 prelim.
Yeah.
It was really the time that he spent on the bench before that. 2024, I should say. Prelim, the time he spent on the bench that Brisbane swung the game in the third quarter.
Yes.
He went back out on the ground. We know what happened after that. It's happened again, seemingly, on Thursday night. So that is a bit of an issue for Geelong. Some SMSs rolling through. Come on, fellas. This is boring. This is from Luke. Everyone knows the Blues aren't losing again this year. So please talk about the September celebrations on Lygon Street. Brett in Canberra says, Marty is no good. Swans are a better team without him.
Yeah,
this is Anonymous. It says, Ben, get on board the purple train. And
he is.
Carolyn says, I am. The ones who missed look like they thought they were kicking an AFL goal. That's in the penalty shootout. And James from Montalbert says, interesting the head issue. Not enough done in Australian soccer to protect young players from headers, Mick. Mm. English soccer protects youngsters better. That's from James.
Well, how do they do that? You've been
maybe soccer this morning. They might be band bally. Who knows?
Presumably banned at an early age.
So, yeah, those balls are heavy. When they get a bit wet, I'd hate to be heading a ball when you've got it coming, as you said, bully about 60 k's an hour from 20, 30 metres away and whacks you fair in the skull.
It is a funny thing.
Isn't it?
It is. Just in general. I get the skill of not using your hands, but who who thought, okay, what about we use our heads instead?
And it's like
and the old leather, the old leather
exactly.
Balls
imagine
in
the
50s,
old balls,
60s and 70s.
Well,
yeah.
That stuff.
Anyway. There are old players who have had, I think, CTE issues, and they believe linked back to that. Coming up next, it's a nice segue into what we're going to speak about, the Four Corners expose from Monday night. Deeply concerning if you are someone who loves Australian rules football and the way it has been played for a long period of time. We'll discuss that next.
This is AFL Saturday.
On ABC Radio, ABC Sport Digital
and ABC Listen.
Just look for the AFL button.
1300 558 222. We'd particularly love to hear from you if you did watch Four Corners back on Monday night, the expose on that program by Jess Halloran around CTE in the game of Aussie rules football and past players who have suffered from it. So back on Monday night, it followed Nick Loudon, who was a 17-year-old when he was concussed, went on to play in a Sandford Premiership and unfortunately suicided, and his brain was shown after death to have significant CTE prevalence. Matty Robbins, who played for the Western Bulldogs in the 2000s, he spoke about the challenges he's facing post-football in his early 40s dealing with memory loss, certainly believes that he has CTE. Mick, I know you watched it. How unnerving did you find it, watching it on Monday night?
Oh, very, very much. Given that with Matt, I know he's down at the Peninsula and he coaches down there. My grandson plays in the same club 1 year up, and I've seen Matt regularly. You know, we just have a chat from time to time. He's down there because of my son-in-law who introduced him to that type of area. And the frightening thing, he made a statement at the end of that was absolutely frightening, that he would not want to see his wife or kids see him like some players end up. So that's a frightening statement. And I dare say that he wouldn't be the only one saying that. And also, unfortunately, he would not be Robinson Crusoe. There'd be so many out there. And so I said to you, Bully, you know, Hemi, I don't know if you're prepared to say it on air, how many times that you've had concussion. And that's a scary stat, Bully, I can say. If you don't want to say it, don't say it. But I think we all worry about that. And it would scare the life out of a lot of mums and perhaps even dads, saying, well, you know, is there a better way? It's fundamentally, if there is a better way, it's fundamentally going to change our game.
Yeah,
that's
the way
I see it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Mick. And the bit that scared me is that what my main takeaway was that it's not so much about the really big concussion, it is about the subconcussive blows. So the thousands of instances that you have when you bump as a teenager, you're tackled as a teenager, playing football over a long period of time. And really, watching that on Monday night as someone who now has a young son, I've always said that the social, the health, the learnings that you get out of playing the game, like overcoming adversity, outweigh the negatives. It was the first time I've equivocated about whether I want my son to play Australian rules football.
Yeah, I didn't see it, I must admit, so just getting up to speed with it now. And it is something that's in the back of your mind, absolutely. I remember almost wearing it as a badge of honour. Early days, you know, before we knew too much about it, you go out, might, you know, put yourself in a dangerous position, get a whack and go and sit on the bench if you had to and wait for the butterflies to fly away and then get out there again and try and inspire the troops. But, you know, we're so much better at it now. I tend to be, you know, whilst respecting absolutely the seriousness of it and the challenges that some people are facing, I tend to be trying to be a bit more optimistic about those things that you're talking about, Ben, and the fact that the game's gone to great lengths to try and certainly outlaw but mitigate for the serious hits that we see now and the serious occurrences that we see. And you're never going to be able to do that fully, are you? Where I sit at the moment, still very much I feel like the benefits of playing the sport and being involved in the team and all that sort of stuff outweigh the other side of it, but when you see stuff like that, you're right. You can absolutely see why, Nick, the things that you're talking about before, that the parent, I'm parent as well, that you think, oh, maybe we need to have a
well, it's interesting, Bully. I've got 10 grandchildren, 5 girls and 5 boys, and there's two at the or three at the moment, and they're the boys that play out of the five, and one's too young at this stage. But I know that his father will have him out there having a kick of the football soon when he's old enough to play Oz kick and that sort of stuff. It has it, but the girls have all gone, not for us, you know. So I think it's, and I don't think the girls are old enough to understand about the concussions. I think it's a major shift that the AFL have to look at. I think the AFL bully, you're right, have done everything they can at the moment under the rules of the game. I think I'm right here to say that young kids, if they get a concussion or get knocked to the head, they've got to have 2 weeks off. I think that's a good thing. It might they might say, oh, look, we want to get back.
I think it's 21 days.
I'm not opposed to that. After watching that show, I'm not opposed to that. And I just think that you got to, do you bring in some sort of thing, mandatory thing, what age they're allowed to tackle and that sort of stuff? I think they've already got some rules in there. So I think we're doing a lot of things right. But you can't change the past. You've been knocked out a few times, as I have, but you can't change that. You know, we just wear it.
Yeah. So I think what they're suggesting is no contact until or no tackling until age 14. Restrictions on contact training throughout all levels and longer stand down periods. So there is a 100 player strong $1 billion class action that he's coming down the pike for the AFL.
What, suggesting $1 billion?
$1 billion. Which is a real concern. Back to the phones. Jacob is in Hamilton. Hello, Jacob.
G'day, gents. How you going?
Very well, thank you.
That's good. I just wanted to call. I was feeling a bit funny about the Thursday night game and everyone worried about Geelong losing, but it just needed remind everyone, don't worry, they're just holding until finals, guys, like they did against Fremantle, you know, so... Mm. I don't know. I thought it was a bit silly, you know, that comment they said against Rio. They're like, oh, you know, they're holding their weapons back and they're going to save it for finals. But if they're not too careful, I mean, they've got a pretty good run home. But, I mean, they could miss top four and then it just seems like a stupid comment. Why was that being peddled?
You're spot on. You're spot on. That's a comment made by people who maybe that's what they think. But reality is, you don't hold back like that because you can lose your form, as Cameron has done. You can't play with form. Form is one of those things you just don't don't muck around. You cut the player out totally, let him have a breather, or in the game style. Yes, you do experiment. Make no mistake about it. Chris Scott's old enough and wise enough to know that you do experiment, but you don't go out there deliberately to lose. Or, in fact, a psychological effect is, we've won the game and we can now, and they know we're coming. So you're spot on. I think it's better that you win games of football than lose games and make out that you're going to be different when the final comes.
Yeah, they've got to go to school. The Lions have got their measures.
You're spot on.
Yeah, as they do a lot of teams. That's not a big, it's obviously not a grand statement, is it? They do with most teams. But the Lions in particular, they've just got the cat's measure at the moment.
You need to be top six to win it too. Like, you're not going to win five games in a row to win the flag.
Especially from that stupid thing that they've got in.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could be eighth by the end of the weekend, like I said. Stuart is the next of our callers. Hello, Stuart.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. The question I've got is, how does the concussion in the AFL stack up against rugby league and rugby union? Because, you know, you look at the way those guys hit each other and, you know, going full football, surely they'd have quite... You would imagine they would have quite a few concussions, you know, there. But because AFL worries me because of the amount that they're having. And, you know, as sure as hell, I wouldn't want my grandsons playing Aussie rules.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That's the same rules that rugby league. I mean, you're absolutely right.
That's an interesting thing. That's a last comment there was very interesting. He's probably only hoping his grandson plays or doesn't play, but that's an interesting that he doesn't want his grandson playing football. I mean, that's a big statement in what we were used to. We used to always, we want our grandsons, we want our sons to play footy, but that's now people are starting to question it.
Archie might have to stick to golf. His swing's already looking pretty good. Let's turn our attention to player movement. I spoke to Danny Daly back on Thursday night pregame, the Brisbane Lions GM of footy, the man who Mick gave his first gig in footy as well. And we had this interesting little dialogue.
Like he's got a couple of meetings this weekend that he's told us about. I think he's expecting Ross to bring a nice bottle of red for him as well. So if Ross is listening, he'll make sure you turn up with a red. But yeah, he's got to do his due diligence and get around the teams, and you know, hopefully Lockie ends up staying with us. But we understand the situation that Lockie's in with his family, etc. So whatever will be, but that's the landscape of the AFL at the minute.
So what are the other meetings that Lockie's got?
I shouldn't have said that, should I?
Oh, that was very handy. We appreciate that. Thanks, Danny. You let that slip out. Now you're comfortable around friends.
I think Essendon's been mentioned, hasn't it? So we'll stick with Essendon.
Okay, we'll stick with Essendon. So it sounds like he's got a few meetings this weekend, which is fascinating. I'm not sure it's just Essendon either and just St Kilda. There might be a couple of other clubs in amongst all of that, maybe Collingwood as well, and maybe even more than that. But, Mick, where we're at the moment, it feels like, or maybe I'll start with you, Ball. It feels like we've gone very quickly from this is taboo, it's not spoken about at all, to now it being very open. And not only do coaches meet with them, they speak about it very openly.
I like the mature. I like the daily and then the Chris Fagan response when he's asked about it after the game. Now, maybe it's easier to say that when you're two tight back-to-back premiers and you got a real shot at a third here. And we're talking about a dual Brownlow medalist, 300 gamer, who is coming towards the end of his career. And I just like the way they spoke about it. And from a player's point of view, they have to. They have to de-risk their future. This is their, you know, we know if they can get to, you know, past 10 years career in footy, you know, the risk they're taking, we just spent 10 minutes talking about the risk they're taking with, you know, with their physical future. They have to look at ways to de-risk their future and maximise their earnings in the game. And I know, Mick, you'll have a slightly contrary view, and maybe it's a horses for courses thing, because if you go over to the Gold Coast, it clearly seems to be affecting a few of the players there. So
no question.
All's well and good when it's a player. And I think the managers and the agents have got to play a role in this too. They're the ones who are close to it, who have to identify that going down this path is going to affect this player's form. And so maybe we have to shelve it for now. Whereas from Lockie Neal's point of view, I love the openness and maturity about it. He's going to go, he's playing great footy. He's going to go full bore trying to win the Lions Premiership this year, and might get to the stage where he even announces it, what he's doing next year before the end of the season. Whether he does or he doesn't, there's never going to be any question as to how Lockie prepares himself to play his role and play his best footy for his team. So that's where I sit on it.
I think we all know it's odds on that he's going to leave. I think it's odds on that King's going to leave, just the way he's going about playing and what's the torment with Damien Hardwick and the side at the moment. They're seeing their side over the journey disintegrate, and just when they thought playing finals football would solidify the whole squad, no, it's fallen away. And some players are starting to make it pretty obvious they're not going to be there. When I think that's what you said, Bully. Some sides are mature enough to take it, other sides aren't. And I remember at Carlton when I was there, and there was a lot of talk about Eddie Betts. I had Eddie around at our place with his wife, and all they wanted to do was talk about, well, particularly his wife, only wanted to talk about Dale Thomas and what he was getting, which one thing I don't do is interfere with what players get and what players they don't get. But you knew from that meeting that night that Eddie was not going to be at Carlton the next year. And I think that there was a little bit of a fall off there, and particularly with a few of his mates around, and just a little bit of a fall off. So there's going to be sides that can cope with it, and there's others that can't cope with it. And I just think it's best to be always behind doors and keep it as quiet as you possibly can. That's my take on it. I know that things change, and, you know, I'm old, and, you know, this is the old system. You kept things to yourself. Not anymore. It's sort of out there.
Which is what Chris Fagan said after the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Chris Fagan's done it very, very well, Chris. He's done it very, very well. I mean, he's also a realist.
That's right.
Because he's picked up, you know, they picked up Oscar Allen. You can't tell me that Oscar Allen, when he was at West Coast, that didn't have a massive effect on the West Coast Eagles players, and him in particular.
Geez, they're going to do well, Ben, aren't they, to keep the dinner location quiet tonight. If we don't see
it was last night.
If we don't see a photo coming out some stage in the next couple of days of that dinner and the bottle of wine that was provided, I'd be staggered.
Oh, I think, and he did mention that they always catch up with a fellow mutual friend that they have. I have a feeling.
I
have a suspicion that might be Zach Dawson. Obviously played
Fremantle for, yeah.
With Lockie at Fremantle, lives in Melbourne now. He's a funny man, Zach Dawson. I think he was one of the most misunderstood people in footy. He was often lambasted by fans. He was sort of a whipping boy. But I saw him at the airport one day, Mick. Jesse Hogan had booted four on him. He had scratches all over his arms. Did you play with him at St Kilda?
Yeah.
I said, oh, gee, Zach, you got scratches all over your arms. He said, I don't know how I got these. I didn't get near Jesse Hogan all night, so I did well to get scratched, but he's a good man. Some text coming through. Perhaps we could have some comments about granddaughters playing as well as sons. All male panel, zero discussions of AFLW. I think you did mention your granddaughters, Nick.
I mentioned my daughters.
Yeah, and Bawley mentioned his daughters. I only have a son, so I can only speak about him, but
no,
hopefully we certainly mentioned.
Well, and my, again, I'll just reiterate, I still want to remain optimistic about it. I'd love my girls to play. They, you know, at the moment they play basketball, which, you know, is a contact sport. I'd love them to pick up footy at some stage. In fact, one of them's going to next season. So just thought, yeah, clearing that up.
Alisa also has texted in and says, my 14-year-old daughter has suffered 3 concussions in 2 years as a goalkeeper from a ball to the head during warm-ups for soccer games. A seriously talented player is now too scared to play. So really tough to protect them. So it is an ongoing issue. We've got 2 coaching searches that are rolling on at the moment as well. So we know that James Hird is going to be a part of the Essendon process. Will they still be able to assemble a competitive field despite his presence in that mix?
It depends on the incumbents or potential incumbents' take on what Essendon are doing. They don't want to embarrass themselves by going along just make up numbers. So this has got to be solved well by Essendon, the way I see it.
I think Hird aside, the challenge the Bombers have got at the moment, that it would appear that the Carlton job is more appealing.
So for the young,
let's call them the new brigade. Maybe Tassie. So let's just focus for the new brigade who are desperate and hungry for their first opportunity.
Third dog at the bowl, aren't they? Yeah.
If you put them up against each other on the wall, they're probably going to interview for the Carlton job more so, aren't they, than the Bombers job? Will prefer to. So that's a challenge I think they've got. Regardless of. Of whether James Hird sort of looms over the whole process, which he does clearly, but
well, the boys,
I think enough sting's gone out of it now for it to be considered a legitimate process. That word process.
Yeah. Well, the boys at Tassie say Longmuir, Longmire, Hinkley, Buckley.
Yeah.
So you would suspect that, let's say, one of them get it. Does that mean the other two are then up for the other two jobs?
I don't think so. I think that's a separate job. That one's the one that probably needs the figurehead, the senior, the person who's either got big name or premiership coach in terms of Longmire. From the other two's point of view, I'd be really staggered, again, Hird aside, if it wasn't a hungry
young
first time coach with a really good strong CV. Everyone talks obviously to McRae's the most recent example of that. For both jobs, I'd be really staggered if it wasn't.
I still don't think it will be Hird. I think it'll be someone else for whatever that's worth. But who would know with Essendon? They're a different beast. Mick, while you're down there today, the game coming up for broadcast immediately after this show is Hawthorn and Melbourne in many places. Of course, you can go wherever you want to. If you jump on the ABC Listen, used to be the ABC Listen app, now just ABC Listen, click on the game, we've got them all. But can you ask Chris Rowbottom, who is the man you're just speaking
to?
He is across everything down there. When is Tasmania going to be given their full licence? We're still waiting for that. 2025, it was meant to be early 2025, and it still hasn't happened. So I would like to know that. We're out of time. Who wins that game, Mick?
The Hawthorn will never get beaten here, so it's hard to go against them.
I think quickly
on the year, would you get that year? Oh, no, we've got 2 seconds.
Save it for the broadcast. We'll hook people over to listen. It's called a tease in the radio game. We'll just hook them over. Craft. Mick, love your work. Enjoy the game. Great to speak to you.
Oh, it's fabulous being down here. Love it.
Love your work today, mate.
Don't come Monday, Corbin.
You've done well, Benny.
We got through everything on the list, didn't we, Mick? You questioned him. How are we going to get through all this content? Well, there you go.
I did.
We did get the right man in the seat.
Corby's lost a job.
Corby, never take a day off in the media. This has been AFL Saturday.